Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Metro Raleigh Business Radio, where business leaders in Raleigh come to tell their stories.
Welcome to NC Tech Talk, North Carolina's internet radio broadcast covering the tech sector. I'm Brooks Rayford, President and CEO of the North Carolina Technology Association, or NCTA, and your host for this month's show. For those of you unfamiliar with NCTA, we're the industry association for the tech sector in North Carolina. We support the sector's growth by focusing on three primary areas of work: executive engagement, which are our events and meetings around the state that highlight leaders and best practices in the use of technology; knowledge workforce, which is our term for education, talent development, and recruitment to meet the skill demands of our economy; and public affairs, which is our topic for today's show, so more about that shortly. To learn more about us, visit our website at nctechnology.org. Our Twitter handle is at NCTA, and we have a company page on LinkedIn. If you'd like to receive updates or tweets about this show or would like to make comments, tweet to hashtag NCTechTalk. We're broadcasting live at Business Radio X's Metro Raleigh station at the Wireless Research Center. Our show airs on the fourth Monday of every month and features North Carolina leaders discussing their impact on the tech sector. Today's show will feature two important players in the North Carolina public policy arena. Joining us today is Ed Turlington, a partner with the law firm of Brooks Pierce, where he and his colleague Chris McClure represent the Tech Association and a number of tech companies. We're also very honored to have with us North Carolina State Representative Tom Murray of Wake County, where he represents House District 41, a very tech-heavy district. Ed, let me start with you. You served in the executive branch of government when the tech sector was first getting legs in North Carolina, and over the past dozen years have represented the Tech Association along with a number of tech companies along the way. Describe the attitude of state government toward technology companies and the tech sector in North Carolina.
Well, Brooks, thank you for having me, and good to be here with my friend Representative Murray. I think the short way to describe it is a favorable atmosphere. As I think about it, on a couple of levels. First of all, the state is a large consumer of information technology, as you know. Last time I looked, the state, through its various entities, buys over $1 billion of hardware, software, or IT services annually. So the state's a big consumer. But then as you look at policy, ranging from training opportunities on the education sector to tax policy to things that I know Representative Murray will touch on later, like changes in the law related to patent trolls, on balance, I think we're favorable, although there's always work to be done.
Well, one of the things that the association has focused on for a long time is the economic development impact of the tech sector in our state. What have you seen the state do in the policy arena to encourage or incentivize companies to either grow here, start here, or move here?
Well, first of all, it's been my experience that policies that are good for business in general are good for tech companies at all stages. So there's state policies that have encouraged the starting of companies. You think about technology transfer out of some of our universities like NC State, UNC Charlotte, and others. Second of all, over the course of time, there have been some efforts to encourage financing help. You remember a few years ago, the legislature authorized the treasurer to use part of her funds for an innovation fund. Mm-hmm. A third thing I would point to in the education sector is increased emphasis on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics at many different levels. And then finally, I touched on a minute ago, the importance of tax policy. The legislature in the last few years has cut the corporate tax rate and maintained certain things like the R&D tax credit. That one, by the way, comes up for renewal next year.
What about some of the credits that were eliminated in the effort to streamline the tax code and lower overall rates, as you mentioned? There's something called the Qualified Business Venture Tax Credit. There's the there's one that's not been on the books, but we've proposed at the association level, and governors have proposed in their budgets around founder stock credits. What are some? Explain some of those and how they're designed to encourage innovation.
Oh, well, thank you for bringing those up. I think it's first of all, important to note that there's a discussion going on among state leaders in the last few years and in future years about what the tax code should be in general terms. You saw the beginnings of that debate with the lowering of the corporate rate, the lowering of the personal income tax rate, some broadening of the sales tax coverage. So any tax change, I think, needs to be put within that prism. Second of all, there were some things that were allowed to expire, like the qualified business venture credit, that would incent individuals to invest in certain early stage companies. I'm hoping in the next few years we can continue to discuss tax policy like that with certain leaders, Representative Murray and others, to see what makes sense as we go forward. Another thing that's not a tax issue, Brooks, but the past governors and the legislature have invested in these matching to the SBIR federal program.
What is that?
As I understand it, in broad terms, there's a federal program that incents certain investment in particular early stage companies, types of early stage companies, and then the state in past years has appropriated money to kind of go alongside with that to give it a bigger bang for the buck. Some years, depending on the budget situation, the appropriation has been healthier than others.
One of the things the legislature deals with as well is policy on issues that might affect the business community broadly but have particular impact or are of particular interest to the tech sector. One of those this past year was the patent troll reform bill. There's some others. Talk about some of those issues that might have broad implications but are of special interest to our sector.
And I'm sure Representative Murray will touch on this in a second, but the patent troll law now is part of, I think, an overall look at legal reform. What makes sense when individuals and companies have the ability to bring certain lawsuits? And there are legitimate lawsuits, but there are, in the case of, like, with patent troll, there were a lot of people who would just buy up a bunch of patents just for the sake of being able to sue others and get payment in return. They would not get those patents to in any way turn them into a company or to jobs. So in my mind, that has been a positive thing.
Okay, good. One of the things that on the policy side the legislature deals with is how technology is used. For example, in education, there has been an initiative to move to digital textbooks. There's also been a move to drive e-citizenry through use of e-signatures and other ways to streamline the process of citizens engaging their government. Can you talk a little bit about some of those?
Yes. Well, let's talk first on the education sector. Something that started over 20 years ago and is now the statewide backbone for all levels of education with high-speed internet is the NCREN network, maintained by MCNC, which is a nonprofit corporation set up years ago. The state doesn't fund it directly, but the state gives money to UNC, K-12, and community college to be able to use that high-speed backbone, but the state doesn't have to keep it up. MCNC has an endowment to do that. So that would be an example, in my mind, of a wise investment. A second thing, and Governor McCrory has been an advocate for this, is opening up the government through technology. You know, we've all seen him in these public settings where he holds up his phone and said, why shouldn't I be able to renew my driver's license or whatever on phone? And then a final thing, and the governor has also spoken up on this, and Representative Murray has been involved in this, how can we keep our technology modernized in state government and education so that citizens, students, people in the healthcare system, et cetera, are getting the best technology for their lives?
A little while ago, you mentioned something that might surprise a lot of our listeners, which is that of the state's roughly $19 or $20 billion budget, about $1.5 billion of that is spent on IT, broadly defined. That can be IT products and services and so forth. That's a pretty substantial chunk. And so, needless to say, the way that IT is procured and delivered in state government is a major focus of the legislature. Talk a little bit about some of the changes of late. We have a new CIO that came in with the new governor, and the legislature has worked with that CIO to change some of the ways we go about procurement. How have we seen that develop, and what seems to be on the horizon?
Well, It's my understanding of that roughly $1 billion, over half of that goes for personnel. So I don't want our listeners to think that necessarily it's all hardware and software, because you need qualified people all over government. And by the way, that number includes the court system and UNC. And Brooks, as I remember, about 3/4 of that billion is in the court system and UNC, and about 250 million is in what you would think of as kind of traditional state government. So that's the number. In terms of positive reform, I do think the governor made a good policy decision to strengthen the role of the state CIO even more than in the past, to make it clear in his cabinet agencies that the people who were the agency CIOs had at a minimum a direct dotted line to that CIO to coordinate policy, to coordinate architecture, to coordinate procurement. There's still some things that can be done, I think, to improve our procurement system, and we look forward to working on those.
Well, let's take that segue as a good last question. As you look ahead for the coming, not just the coming session, but just in the next few years, we have an election coming up, but I think most folks would say we're not likely to see a major shift in the control of the legislature. So with this governor and essentially this legislature and the current leadership on the staff level within IT and other places, what do we see happening? What do you think some of the initiatives will be that might impact our sector here in the coming year or so?
Well, one we've touched on, I think there'll be a continuation of the modernization and the upgrading of technology throughout all levels of state government, which is good for all of us as citizens. Second of all, the legislature passed a law that said by 2017 that instructional materials in K-12 classrooms statewide have to be in a digital format instead of the traditional hardcover textbook. And a plan is being developed that the legislature, I think, will consider at some point in 2015 going forward. And you think about, there could be advantages on that in the sense that materials could be upgraded more often. Potentially there's some cost savings there. A third thing I would cite, I do believe we'll have a continuing debate over the role of economic incentives. My sense is the way that wind is blowing is what are called performance-based incentives. A company might get a financial incentive of some sort if they actually meet a job creation topic instead of just getting some check on the front end. And then finally, I do think we have this ongoing debate on tax policy that isn't finished yet.
Well, a lot to come, obviously, and a lot to pay attention to, which our association certainly will. Thanks, Ed. We really appreciate you taking time to come in and share a bit of that with us. We've been talking to Ed Turlington of the Brooks Pierce Law Firm that represents the North Carolina Technology Association and other tech sector clients on state public policy matters. Ed, tell us where they can find you on the web.
Our website is very simple, brookspierce.com. Okay. And we have offices in Raleigh, Greensboro, and Wilmington, about 90 lawyers, and I welcome any inquiries from anybody about these policy matters.
Great, and I should also say that on the association's website, which is nctechnology.org, you'll find a public policy section that includes the general public policy agenda of the association. We'll be updating that shortly for 2015. It always follows... interestingly, there's a lot of alignment. It follows what the governor calls the three E's, which are education, the economy, and efficiency of government. And I think our agenda of priorities follows that pretty well. And we'll be tweaking that and refining it for the coming year. So you've told us how we can find you on the web. I've mentioned how you can find us. As I mentioned, this is NC Tech Talk on Business Radio X, out of their Metro Raleigh station. This monthly internet radio show is hosted by the North Carolina Technology Association, and you can find us on the web at nctechnology.org or on Twitter at NCTA, and our show uses the hashtag NCTechTalk. Our website also has links to the podcasts of today's and previous shows. And with that, I'd like to welcome Representative Tom Murray to the show today. Representative Murray's district is in the tech-heavy portion of Wake County, so he has particular interest in our sector and those who are employed by it. As we broadcast live here on October the 27th, we're especially appreciative that you've come into the studio, considering you're on the ballot in just 2 weeks and probably have a lot of places you could be. One thing we know is that the tech sector affects and is affected by almost all areas of public policy, so I'll ask you to comment on a variety of things during our brief time with you. An area we're all interested in is in the economy and jobs, so I'll lead with that. You chair some key committees in the House of Representatives around the economy and jobs and commerce. Tell us a little bit about the recent reorganization of the state's Department of Commerce and how that might affect recruitment of companies that bring high-skilled jobs.
Well, thanks for having me, Brooks. I think that the reorganization of the Department of Commerce is going to illuminate a focus on high-growth areas like the tech sector. If you look at North Carolina, we're traditionally an agriculture state. It's still the number one industry in our state, $78 billion industry. But we have other high-growth industries like biopharma and technology. And I think when you focus on our strengths, focus on the strengths of our state, and agriculture being number one, but biotechnology and biopharma and the IT sector being strengths as well, I think you're going to see all those sectors continue to flourish and be a major focus of how we can tie the urban areas of Wake County and Mecklenburg and tie those areas to the rural areas. And one of the ways to do that is when we attract an IT company, if we could also partner with them to do advanced manufacturing in this state as well, we can have a true rural-urban partnership in the technology space.
Well, some of the sectors you mentioned that are sort of related, advanced manufacturing, life sciences, and so on, these are typically pretty well-paying positions, at least relative to the average in North Carolina. So there's a lot of literature out there about the importance of creating innovation jobs, because not only are they high paying, they tend to have a ripple effect and create other jobs in the economy. What do you hear? You serve as chair of the Commerce Committee and in other roles. What do you hear companies say as they're being recruited here that they need? What is it that they are looking to state government for?
What they need from the state of North Carolina is to make sure that we have the regulatory framework that doesn't kick them in the shins the first day they show up to the state of North Carolina. And so we've been really working on improving and modernizing the regulatory system. And also, that's part of the reorganization of the Department of Commerce. Having our economic development officials speak the same language as the business community. And a lot of times, what these IT firms and some of these biopharmaceutical companies that come down to look at the state of North Carolina, instead of sending their CFO or other brass, they send their human resources. And so they see our state. We've got mountains. We've got great K-12 system. We've got a great university system. We've got the beaches. And so they look at the total package of the state of North Carolina. And I think that's really the goal of this public-private partnership that we have with the Department of Commerce, is to sell the total package of the state of North Carolina, not just how much incentive money they might be looking at. Let's sell the total package of our state. Government traditionally doesn't do marketing very well. And so when you have a public-private partnership with folks that speak the same language of the private sector, ultimately what we're going to see is that our economic development process will move at the speed of business and not at the speed of government.
Well, let me pick up on one of the elements you mentioned, and that's education. What we hear as an association representing the tech sector is a very common theme about the importance of a strong education system, K through whatever, whether that's community colleges, the university system and private colleges that we have here, or beyond. A lot of certifications and credentialing that is either alongside or in addition to those kinds of degrees. So talk to us a little bit about some of the education policy, teacher pay raises, all the sort of inputs that the government can address that hopefully give us the outputs we're looking for.
Certainly. My mom was a school teacher for over 30 years, and she had a master's degree, and she never made $50,000 a year. So when we start talking about teachers, it's real personal to me. I've lived in that household. And when you look at the decade from 2000 to 2010, North Carolina was 51st in the country on teacher pay raises. And so that was a tough span. And so what we're trying to do is kind of reverse that trend and head in the right direction. So the $282 million investment that we made this year in teacher pay brings North Carolina to the 30s. That means we're heading in the right direction. I think there's plenty more work to do. And we've also modernized the teacher pay plan. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about teachers, or we're talking about K-12 education, or we're talking about a university system, we need to be talking about results. Are we producing the student with a skill set that benefits a company in the 21st century economy that's globally competitive? And so mom sends their kids to college to go get a job. And so if we need to make sure that we have placement rates for those degrees that we have in the university system, we need to treat our chancellors like CEOs and make sure that they are held accountable and doing what matters for the state of North Carolina to help move our economy forward. And so I think we've got a great example of what can be done with a partnership between the university system and the private sector on Centennial Campus. Mm-hmm. There's if you look at some of the buildings on Centennial Campus, there's ability for a student to go to class in the morning, do an internship in the afternoon, and when they graduate, they get a job and they don't have to leave the building. And that's a great model for our higher education system. And then when you do the community college wraparound, you've got the ability to really advance and attract advanced manufacturing to our state. And so that's a beautiful marriage between the research going on in the traditional universities and the university system and the ability to increase advanced manufacturing in the community college system. I think we've got a great ecosystem that's the rival of the world.
We sure do. We're lucky to be in a state that has a number of pockets of that here in the Triangle for sure, which you represent, Charlotte, and other places that have some real strength along those lines. Let me switch gears again to the business side of the equation. We mentioned earlier that there have been some bills this past session that were of particular interest to our membership and to the innovation ecosystem. You were the one who led the charge on some of those. We talked about patent reform a bit earlier. That's been going on at the federal level, or I should say not going on at the federal level, which necessitated some state action. So maybe you can talk a bit about that. You also championed a crowdfunding bill that was very popular and always passed various stages with healthy margins when it was a standalone vote, but got caught up in end of session mechanics and so did not pass out. But tell us about those two and any other bills you'd like to highlight.
Yeah, the patent trail bill is very rewarding to me because I think it brought together a really good cross-section of the business community in our state, ranging from the bankers to the retail merchants to the realtors and the home builders, and then the traditional technology sector. And so it's nice to see the business community coming together and protecting small companies and large companies to make sure that innovation can flourish in our state. And some of the folks that we worked with, especially I want to give a shout out to John Boswell, the general counsel for SAS, because he was really, if you start listening to some of the cases that SAS has gone through, and really rewarding to me able to have a business leader like John Boswell from SAS and make sure we get this bill passed to benefit all the technology companies in our state. With regards to crowdfunding, we didn't quite get across the finish line, but I think it's definitely an idea that we will continue to pursue. It'll be one of the first bills I file when I have the opportunity to serve the people of District 41 again in the 2015-16 biennium. And it will. I think that's a good bill to help our small business innovators capitalize their idea, use the power of the internet, and not have to go out and become a stockbroker to be able to make an offering. And so I think crowdfunding is a great way. Another issue that I'm tipping my toes in is the open data conversation, and how we can open up some of this government data to allow some of our tech crunchies work on it and help us analyze what just exactly the data that we've got to help move state government in the right direction so we can be lean and mean and do things as best we can.
You know, it strikes me that some of the things you've just talked about really are not just bipartisan, pretty overwhelmingly so. These are issues that have to do with increasing efficiencies, improving quality of service, improving quality of access to information. The two bills we talked about in particular were nearly unanimous in support as they move through, so that's encouraging. You were on a panel we hosted about the patent troll bill, sitting alongside the Attorney General, who has some consumer protection rules and authority that come along with that, so it's great to see that sort of work together. There are a lot of sectors in our economy and in our government that deal with IT from a very different angle, and that is threat. Cybersecurity is a constant concern around any enterprise that has data. Talk a little bit about that. Are there some areas with it that government has control over or responsibility for where you either have some concerns or taking some actions to address that?
Yeah, recently I've had the opportunity to sign up and join the North Carolina National Guard as an officer with the Judge Advocate's Office, and I've gotten some briefings with some of the other, Greer Martin is a JAG, Jeff Jackson is a JAG, so we got other judge advocates in the legislature. But when you start looking at the number of foreign threats on the data that our state has, you know, mainly the state treasurer's office and basically trying to steal our taxpayer dollars, it's really frightening. And the opportunity that we have is that the National Guard actually has broader police powers than some of the DOD, traditional DOD U.S. Army. And so, but the challenge is trying to get our technology companies with talented personnel affiliated with the North Carolina National Guard to help advance our protection of cybersecurity. And so I think there's a real opportunity to partner with the excellent talent that we have in the Triangle region to partner with Joint Forces Headquarters right here in Raleigh and help advance cybersecurity. And so it's something that I'm definitely monitoring and interested in to help protect our citizens from cyber attacks from around the world.
Well, that issue, I think, is very front and center on people's minds these days as we read about these kinds of things in the commercial arena. But you're right, government data is a pretty rich treasure trove of information, and we want to make sure we protect that. There are other areas where technology plays a role. You've had some activity around alternative energy and some other examples like that. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, when you look at the number of jobs that have been created in the state of North Carolina in the renewable energy space, it's pretty remarkable. And with that brings some challenges. And renewable energy provides great promise for us from an energy production perspective, but we've got an old grid. And so when you look at the grid modernization effort that some of our companies in North Carolina, ABB and companies like that are operating on Centennial Campus and partnerships with Duke Energy and just the various level of activities in that area, I think North Carolina is going to be a leader. We're helping developing better batteries and better battery charging operations. And so all of that results in a cleaner economy and good jobs, good high-paying jobs that North Carolina is leading the way on.
That's great. You have recently been on a trip I want to ask you about. Most of us know that India is a place that has a lot of tech talent. In fact, it's a controversial conversation to have about outsourcing and those sorts of things, but there are companies that are investing in North Carolina who are India-based and that have a lot of employees worldwide and right here and growing right here in our region. Tell us about your trip, what you learned, what some of the insights were that you got from it.
Certainly. This past February, I led a bipartisan delegation through the Center for International Understanding, which is one of the centers at the University of North Carolina, on a non-taxpayer-funded trip. It was funded exclusively from private foundations and various corporations. And we went to Mumbai or Bombay. We went to Bangalore, and we visited Delhi, and also visited the Taj Mahal in Agra. But while we're in Bangalore, we visited three $8 billion companies, all of which have plenty over 80,000 employees worldwide. One of those companies was HCL, which just recently announced an expansion in Cary, they're going to add around 1,200 jobs. And so I think that conversation where instead of outsourcing one way, it's a two-way street. It's a partnership. And so they have U.S. customers that they want to service in the Eastern time zone, and they find Cary and the Research Triangle Park a good place to do business because there's an abundant supply of talent, and they have the ability to service some of their larger clients and that have U.S. operations.
Well, those trips are great for expanding your horizons as a lawmaker. It's good for you to have a good broad perspective as you make decisions on our behalf. So I'm glad you had a chance to do that. Let me wind things up by asking you the same question that I asked our other guest, Ed Turlington, earlier, and that is, as you look ahead in the new year, what do you see on the horizon in the legislature, either that you'll be helping take a lead on or just sort of general themes you see taking shape that will be related to economic development in the tech sector?
Well, I think you're going to see that the General Assembly continue working on improving teacher pay. I mean, I think that's the number one issue on everybody's mind. And we've modernized the pay plan, and now we want to continue executing and bringing that teacher pay up to a reasonable national average. We also want to focus on student performance, and that's key to the tech sector because the STEM areas in our K-12 and K-16 education system are crucial to continuing our economy moving forward. Over the past 4 years, the state of North Carolina has added about 250,000 jobs, and many of those jobs are in high growth areas like the tech sector. So we want to make sure we have a good talent supply And I'm definitely focusing on that. And the last thing I'll say is we want to continue to foster an economic development environment through our regulatory system and taxation system, where businesses are looking at the state of North Carolina and they see a big open for business sign. And that's our number one goals, is to continue improving teacher pay and continue improving on student performance and making sure that North Carolina is open for business, for companies to invest right here and create jobs.
Well, that sounds great. Representative Murray, I want to thank you again for taking time to be on our show today. Our listeners can find you on the General Assembly's website at ncleg.net, and they can find out about your campaign positions at votemurray.com. I want to thank both of our guests for their time in the studio. We wish you both luck as the legislature gears up for the 2015 session. And thanks to our listeners for joining us here on NC Tech Talk. If you want to learn more about this show, including archived broadcasts, or anything else about the association, please visit us online at nctechnology.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at NCTA and on LinkedIn. Our next show will be held on Monday, November 24th, when we'll feature some of the winners from the NC Tech Awards. The Tech Awards Gala is being held in the Triangle on November the 6th, with 700 or so leaders from across the state attending. Learn more about how to be a part of that celebration at nctechawards.com. In the meantime, have a great afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to NC Tech Talk.